This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer-beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Welcome to the Rapcast. My name is Zarar, and today I'm joined by Raptors Republic writer Kyle Brickman. Hey, Kyle, what's going on, man?
I'm great. How are you?
Let's get to some Raptor talk. It is my first podcast in a while. It's a little rusty on these things. And one of the things I want to start off with is the Pascal Siakam trade talk that's been hitting the airwaves of late. And every trade that I have seen mentioned, and I don't even know if these trades are real, or I don't even know if the writers are making this stuff up just for clickbait purposes. My conclusion really is that this stuff is being made up by reputable writers so that they can publish some websites and get some hits. But let's talk about them because that's what we're in the business to do. So every trade that I have seen for Pascal Siakam results in him being the best player moving in that trade, which violates my number one rule of trading anybody, is that if you're going to get somebody, that guy better be the best player in the deal without question, or maybe with some argument. With the Siakam trade, he's the best player leaving. It's completely unlike the DeMar trade, where it was obvious who got the best player. Here, we're losing the best player. So just based on that fundamental principle of trades, I reject every Pascal Siakam trade that's been proposed.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the one that really started it all was Hollinger, right, in that Athletic piece about, I think he was mostly just reviewing sort of general draft trades, and he mentioned Siakam for Wiseman 7-14, which, like, that's not once that trade was spoken about by Hollinger, it opened the floodgates to like a number of just like absolutely horrible ones, which in contrast have made that first Hollinger trade look like that's not terrible. It's not the worst haul you get for Siakam, but like, my thing is, it's like, imagine your car like breaks down the 401 and you just like snap a picture right there and like post it on AutoTrader. Like, we're selling it right now. Like, it's like his value has never been lower. Like, even probably since he's like at least broken out, maybe not his first couple of years in the league, but since he's broken out, he's never had lower value. And it's like the insurance money is coming. You were in there, like, no one can survive in Tampa in a hotel for an entire year and be like mentally okay. Like, no one, and that affects, like, I'm sure if you spoke to Siakam, like, if you spoke to Pascal, he would admit, like, oh no, this has taken a toll on all of us mentally. It's affected our games. Like, it's not breaking news to say that being in lockdown in a foreign country and having your fans like boo you in your own building, like, that's not great playing conditions. At least if you're looking to move on from Pascal, maybe give him 6 months in Toronto. Let him play it to the trade deadline. I guess you maybe risk, because I guess the idea would be, right now, if you really, as an organization, if you're the Raptors, you really don't believe in Pascal, then maybe you want to capitalize at this moment and not risk him playing that half season and doing poorly. But I'm confident he's will he become the next superstar? No, probably not. But he's not going to, like, he's going to improve over his performance. And that the level of performance, especially in the bubble in the playoffs, that's unsustainable for really like any NBA player. It was very poor.
Yeah. And you know, like you already touched upon how we are sort of selling him at the lowest point of his value. I mean, even if you look past the Tampa season and some of the poor play there, he's injured. And he's out for 5 months. I think at this point, if you are looking to acquire Pascal Siakam, you have really no incentive to pay a lot because you're looking to get him on the cheap right now for all the factors that you mentioned and the fact that he's injured. So even if I'm trying to think for the Raptors to I'm trying to think of a reason why the Raptors would be interested in such a trade. And the only answer that I can come back with is if they are looking for maybe even get younger and sort of retool and go back 3 or 4 years and say, hey, the current roster maybe isn't what we wanted. Let's get 2 or 3 young guys in here and like go back into the 22, 24 range and start building with the OG age range rather than the Pascal Siakam age range. And that makes no sense to me because it's not like the current team doesn't have a contention window, which you can sort of frame and try to execute on. This team is still pretty damn good. I mean, sure. I mean, Aaron Baines' experience kind of diluted everybody's appetite.
Millions of Canadians were turned off basketball.
Right. But I think we're projecting that experience and applying it forward a little bit too much. The idea of getting younger, do you subscribe to that? Do you see any reason why we would be looking to shift our window back 3 or 4 years?
Not that I necessarily subscribe to it, but like I understand the thinking. Like you need a top level guy to win a championship, and it's been obvious for years now. And like Siakam, there's a chance he blooms and you know, if you would have tracked his trajectory like in a linear way from the All-Star break 2 years ago, he might already be that player. But it probably surprise me if we see Siakam have like an MVP type season. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's like not worth keeping around. This is a bigger conversation about whether to really blow the whole core up, because Fred is in his later stages of his 20s. Siakam is like, you know, you mentioned getting back into that OG range. So I guess what the Raptors are hoping for right now is either Fred and Siakam are still playing at a high enough level when that next player, that player who is the ceiling raiser, arrives, whether that be with the number 4 pick, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, or whether that be maybe there's some free agency move, maybe Masai like finds the next, I don't know, maybe Karl Anthony Towns instead of Minnesota, maybe Beal or Lillard, although you'd probably have to give up big assets to get them. So I guess the hope would be that Siakam and Fred VanVleet like are at a good enough level that when this player arrives, it's instantly a championship contender. And if not, then if you don't see that window, sort of those windows lining up, then maybe it makes sense to move on.
Yeah. And that player, that Messiah, when this Messiah will arrive for the Raptors, we don't know who he is. We don't know when he's going to get here. He may get here. He may not get here, but we get a plan for the event in case he gets here. I mean, that seems like a very, very, you know, risky plan to take. I don't know what the possibilities are of the 4th pick materializing into that, or what Wiseman plus 7 materializing into that. I think going that way is you're definitely getting younger. You're not getting better, and you're not necessarily opening up the possibility of acquiring that player. I think acquiring a player like that can only happen, not can only, but usually happens through trade. And if you are looking to acquire that sort of trade, you get the old conundrum that if you package VanVleet and Siakam into a trade and you get like a person who's better than them, well, that person has nobody to play with now, right? So what do you do? So when you look at all these options that are on the table for the Raptors, sort of holding steady, drafting with the 4th, maybe packaging, I don't know, one of the guys up to get somebody else later on in the season when values are a little higher instead of what the COVID season has given us. That to me seems like a more sensible direction. And also, there's no rush. Like I don't see a real need to make this trade now, especially when everybody you ask, the general consensus is that this team really hasn't shown what it's capable of, even with the current roster.
Yeah, I do want to mention though, let's hold out hope for Shea when his contract expires. Let's hold hope for RJ. Maybe that's free agency is a possibility, at least for the Raptors' you know, with this generation of Canadians.
And that does not require us to like ship away assets right now on the cheap.
But that's a bad plan. Just like pray that Shea wants to come back to Toronto.
That's the same plan. I mean that would have been same as when remember last year when we were kind of all like,
yeah, right, Giannis, okay, when's Giannis coming?
Like Giannis is coming over, and then he signs and he wins a chip.
I got to say, I've never been less confident in Giannis coming to the Raptors.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Giannis. You know, the NBA Finals ended. The Bucks beat the Suns. Obviously, who are you rooting for in that series?
So, strangely enough, I guess my girlfriend's dad has like a family connection with Pat Connaughton, and he was like visiting us. So I kind of like, I was rooting for the Bucks strictly because of that. But I think under other circumstances, I probably would have been a Suns supporter just because of like, this is a whole different conversation, but like what rivalries the Raptors have. But like, I'd say the Bucks are like top five Raptors rival. That was an intense series in 2019. This is a tough series. So I would otherwise have been going against the Bucks had it not been for Pat Connaughton, who had a great series, by the way.
Yeah, I would go against the Bucks for a number of reasons. Number one being, you know, the rivalry that the Raptors have with them. Second being that Giannis rejected Toronto, so I obviously wanted to see him fail, at least in this instance. Also, third, I mean, I like Chris Paul. I thought he's a vet who's been in the league forever. He's been a top level player for a long, long time. He's almost changed his golf swing, if you will, and changed how he's approaching the game or the contracts that he signs, the teams that he plays. He had a chance to go to a big name team, you know, stuck with the Suns. So you always like to see stuff like that get rewarded. It was almost like a Raptors story. I forget who it was. I think it was Josh Howe who had a piece on Raptors Republic.
And
Chris Paul. So I thought maybe the Suns winning by proxy is like Lowry getting happy. It's weird how you psychologically justify who you cheer for.
I might have a different psychological justification. I think if anything, like the Giannis sticking in Milwaukee gives hope for, you know, when, not if, Jalen Suggs becomes like the next star, whoever is drafted for, whoever we find wherever, that sort of sets the blueprint that like, oh, I have no problem staying in this market and winning a championship.
I'd also say I look at it the other way too. We're just making stuff up here, by the way. But here's one more theory. Giannis goes, hey, small town Bucks team, see, I held my promise together.
I'm out of here.
I got you guys the title. I'm out of here. It's like LeBron in Cleveland. There's always that possibility as well. So depending on, you know, how your mind works, you may choose to subscribe to any of these little theories. But I know you wanted to talk about what this title means for small market teams.
I more so wanted to make this sort of like a referendum or a conversation about like what constitutes like small market? Because like there are, let me just read you the list of champions over the last 10 years. So, or the last, since 2010. So LA, big market, Dallas, middle, big, upper middle class, Miami. If you're going by the size of the population of the city, like by the standards of all of North America, that's a sort of upper middle class market. Maybe it's a big basketball market because it's where people like to live. Then you have San Antonio, small, both in terms of like popularity and population. San Francisco, which I just want to say, the Bay Area, the Metro Bay Area has 4 million people about. The Golden Horseshoe, like the Metro Toronto, has 7 million people. How on earth are we like a small or mid market and Golden State is a big market team? And I guess it sort of brings me to my next point is that like we can go through the rest of the champions, but because the next one is Cleveland, which is definitely a small market. But like this definition of like what constitutes small and big markets has nothing to do with like the necessarily like the viewership or the population. It's all about like glamour. So like there are five glamour markets in the NBA. You have the two New York teams, the two LA teams, and the San Francisco, whatever, Bay Area team. But that doesn't track with like the biggest populations in the NBA. Like Houston is huge. Philly is huge and Dallas is huge. And like Dallas is not a big market team. In fact, if anything, like there was a similar narrative a decade ago when the humble Dallas Mavericks beat like the super team Heat. And that was like, that was the story of the NBA. Like, oh, thank God we have these non-traditional, non-glamour markets winning championships. Like half the decade, like a third of the decade, it's non-glamour markets winning championships. Like traditionally non-glamour markets, your Clevelands, your Dallases, your Milwaukees, your Torontos. And that tracks with like the distribution of markets without the league. There are about a third of the league is non-glamour. About a third of the league is like mid-tier. And about a third of the league is like pure glamour. I don't understand. I think it's maybe it's like, and we're as Raptors fans, like guilty of this. Like you doubted us. You didn't believe in us. We're the humble little northern like market. And like, we're completely different from everyone else. And like Milwaukee's doing the same thing now. I mean, it's just like a narrative that people like to grab onto. I don't really follow it. I don't see how it makes sense. I'm not sure how you feel.
I mean, I and as you were talking, I was thinking about you know the 90s and the 2000s a little bit, and I think the big market teams were New York, LA, Chicago, not even Miami, and maybe you could make a weak argument for Boston, maybe being part of the big market. And I think what constituted a big market team, and if I can. And I could be totally wrong on this one, is just that NBA players could party there. And yeah. Those were teams that were able to like give you the Bird exception and spend $40 million on you and give you that contract so you could stay there. So when you have wealth, wealth attracts wealth, and you kind of, it's a snowball effect, and that market becomes big. And obviously the nightlife and off the court, you have a lot of, as you said, glamour. So, and I think that was historically the case for the most of the 90s. And I'd say, maybe a bit earlier than that, 80s as well. And at some point, the salary cap changed where things became a lot more equitable. And a lot of the loopholes which teams used to sign players to kind of went away. And there was more incentive for players to move around to get the best deal that they could get. And that when that happened, obviously the wealth got spread. And suddenly you had like New York going without the playoffs for like, I don't know, a decade or whatever it took them. The Clippers were always crappy, but the Lakers also, you know, went through a couple of patchy spots there after Kobe. Chicago, after Jordan, went through a whole stretch where they did like absolutely nothing. Miami, after Zoe and Tim Hardaway, went nowhere. You know, Boston was crappy in the early Paul Pierce years. So I think as the salary cap changed, the collective bargaining agreements changed. What defined a big market change, and now we're sort of playing catch up. But I like the way you frame the thirds. I don't think it's a big market, small market. I think it's you are a glamour market. You are a Milwaukee, Toronto, these teams who have stable franchises, stable fan bases, and so on. And then you have the third group where you have Sacramento's, the Charlottes, where you really haven't done much in a very, very long time. But those destinations aren't attractive because of the cities themselves. They're unattractive because of the lack of winning in those cities. And I think if you were a good team in the 90s and 2000s, you still had trouble attracting free agents. But now, if you're a good team in a small market, you will attract free. I think that's what's changed over the years.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. And you know what? Not to get like too political, but it's like, wow, it's almost like redistributing wealth like works. You know, it's like, that's incredible. Like,
it's redistributing wealth within the constraints of the collective bargaining agreement. I think if you're talking about wealth distribution, there's a much better league to look at than the NBA. The NBA kind of sucks at wealth distribution. Wealth distribution is all about the Premier League in England, where all the TV money gets equally distributed into a pie chart for all teams. Compare that to the Spanish league, where two teams who make the most TV, who get the most TV audiences, get the money. So the socialism argument applies more to EPL than it does to the NBA. The NBA is more of a, I don't know what kind of political system it is, but it's not pure socialism.
Yeah, it's a monarchy. It's like Adam Silver's like complete and total domain. Yeah, go ahead. I'm let you move on to where you want. I wanted to talk about the sort of draft a little bit, if you're
go for it. I mean, let's talk draft. I mean, I'm so tired of even Raptors Republic, to be honest with you, just talking about the same four freaking guys over and over again. At this point, can the draft just come? Like, let me pull on that thread a little bit. Do you find that the draft coverage is just oversaturated, overanalyzed, completely uninteresting, and the draft, there's nothing to talk about, so you talk about the draft, I feel.
I will say, no matter what the NBA does, there's still, I'm not sure if you follow the NFL at all, but like 2 years ago, the NFL had a draft presentation. It was, I guess it must have been 2020. It was the first COVID year. And it was just every person, it was like a personal tragedy airing their, like, and it was like, this is so depressing and so invasive for these young men. Like, I can't imagine that, like, because the viewers aren't down. I would be out in disbelief if this like 20-year-old kid is like really loving the story about how his dad died or something on the most important night of his life. So I will say, like, no matter how bad the NBA draft coverage gets, like, that is the low bar, and like we can never stoop below that point.
I know it reminds me of like the Westminster Pony Dog Show. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they just trot him out, talk about him, does a little walk, goes away. I mean, here we talk about his numbers and all that. I mean, I guess it's a nice, people are having a good time, and if people are having a good time, I shouldn't crap on them. I just feel that in NBA's case, it's just because there's only 20 picks, right? There's 30 picks, and the second round is 30 more, but people mostly care about the first round, and the lottery is where most of the attention is, and those 14 guys get talked about all the time. And in this year especially, I mean, it's Jalen Suggs. I mean, I guess that's the guy that's going to drop to us at this point. What are you thinking? Is there any effort that the Raptors should be making in moving up or down? How do you think they should handle this one?
So I guess my I want to talk about Scottie Barnes, and I don't want to this is not my wholehearted support for Scottie Barnes. I think he's a good player. I actually think that he started off as super underrated. He shot up the draft boards and it swung all the way the other way, and people are way overrating him. And now, like, with the chatter of like Raptors might be in at Barnes at four, people like are losing their minds. Like, the people in the Raptors subreddit like are getting like personal with Scottie Barnes, and I feel bad. Like, it's just some kid. But I don't mind the selection, but at four, it's a disaster. You have an asset, which is the fourth pick, which is incredibly, incredibly valuable. You're not maximizing that value by picking a player who's slotted to go, you know, one or two picks below, especially in a draft where you have the fourth pick in a four-person draft. So I don't hate Scottie Barnes. I think he's going to be a serviceable NBA player almost for sure, because he's incredibly smart. He's very athletic. And worst case scenario, he's a tremendous defender. And that's all he is. But at four, I would be very disappointed.
Man, I don't follow the draft as closely as I sort of used to. I just find that it's so harsh to say this guy is not a fourth pick and this guy is a seventh pick, especially because, you know, teams work out players. A lot of information is public. A lot of information is private. We are making almost all our, you know, opinions on public information that everybody has. But there is always private information available about players, which can shift the opinion of that player for a particular team. Maybe the Raptors have that private information. Nobody ever is surprised when the Raptors go for somebody out of the blue in the second round and they pick him and he turns out to be a pretty good player. OG, Siakam, or I think OG was late first. I don't know what he was. And Norm Powell come to mind, right? Nobody's like, oh my God, you could have had this guy at like the 38th pick and you got him at the 29th pick. Nobody cares. But from the fourth to eighth, there's like, oh my God, you could have gotten him later. I think that's sort of misleading, because there may be information that teams have that they are not sharing, or the Raptors have that they might not be sharing, that makes it worth their fourth pick. So I don't necessarily have an issue. And can you imagine like trading down to the seventh or eighth pick, hoping to get Barnes, and he gets snatched by somebody else? Bird in a hand is worth two in the bush.
Yeah. So I guess the only, and I'm with you, I think the only options trading down is Orlando at five. And like, you could do OKC at six. That's pushing it. I think that if you do OKC at six, you do so thinking that the Magic are at five. We know their profile. Like, we know their draft profile that they prefer. They like guys who are big and strong and athletic and maybe aren't the most polished. And that sounds like Jonathan Kuminga. And Jonathan Kuminga's player comp, I'm sure, is something similar to Jonathan Isaac and other players who are on the Magic. So you trade to six, maybe you just like sit there and pray. And by the way, the Raptors have connections in the Magic front office. Maybe you call up Dan and say, Dan Tolsman, is it the GM of the Magic who's forming with the Raptors? Maybe you say like, listen, you know, we go back a long time. Why don't you just sort of like give me a hint at who you're picking at five before you do the trade?
But I'm with you. There's got to be a very specific framework of a deal well beforehand that happens. I thought where you might go with this was the other way, where should the Raptors moving up in the draft, not down? Because when the fourth pick was announced, my reaction was we should target Mobley. We should really target Mobley because Cleveland already has a big man. But what Cleveland is saying publicly is that they would still take Mobley, even though that position is sort of sorted for them. I think that's posturing. I think that might be posturing because it doesn't make sense from a player's perspective. I would say, is there a package which we can use to go up the draft and get Mobley, who is a big man that the Raptors actually need? And he satisfies both conditions. One, he is, by all accounts, the best player available at that position, if you go up to the default sort order. And he also happens to be a position that the Raptors have in need. So he checks off both boxes for me. I would trade Chris Boucher and one of our later picks just to get the guy. If they value Mobley that much, that's the move you make.
No, I would trade much more than Chris Boucher in 2 seconds. I mean, I'm with you 100%. And I actually do think, based on what little insider knowledge I have, which is zero, that the first two picks will be Cade and Jalen Green, just because Cade is a lock for number one. And like, if you're the GM of the Pistons, like, you might go a different way, but that's you're threatening your job at that point. It's so easy just to pick Cade. There's zero risk. I'm sure he's going number one. And Raphael Stone, who's in Houston, is a Daryl Morey protege. They don't like big men. In fact, they despise big men. They had a 6'5" guy playing like center during a playoff run. And they traded away Clint Capella for nothing. So I would assume Jalen Green goes too. Now, I'm with you again. I think it's preposterous to think that Jared Allen and Evan Mobley don't fit together. Mobley could easily play the four. I mean, his comp is Anthony Davis. He should be able to shoot based on what he's shown and what scouts say about his form, and he should be able to play make well enough to hold his own at the four spot. But if you're Cleveland and you probably have to move on from Sexland anyway, Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, you probably have to move on from those two guards anyway. You want Suggs because for whatever reason you're enamored with Suggs and you love Jalen Suggs, then maybe it's worth taking a call from the Raptors. And at that point, the Raptors are in a uniquely beneficial position because it's not like Orlando can come in and say, like, we'll give you 5 and 8 for three, because that way Cleveland misses out on Suggs or whoever the fourth pick would end up being. OKC can't say, what, you want 6 and whatever it is, 17, and you want like some guy, like you want 2028 from like the Clippers or something, take it all. You can have it all for 3, because in this situation, Cleveland would want Suggs. So in the case that Cleveland's in love with Suggs, I think it's worth doing. And I think the value would be not too preposterous, but in an open market where Toronto's competing with the Orlandos and the OKCs or whoever else is trying to trade up, I don't see it happening. Cause like you mentioned, Boucher in 2 seconds, that's not going to cut it.
I have no idea what trade is feasible and what's not feasible. I just think in a situation like this, if you are enamored or if you have targeted a person who is both the best player available and a fit for your team, you do what you can to do it. I am assuming that Masai, although he has not officially signed a contract extension, is working behind the scenes to sort of make this happen. Can you imagine if you found out like a couple of months from now, Masai is like completely out of office. You send him an email and an autoresponder comes back. Yeah, I'll be back, maybe.
See, I thought they posted like the Raptors posted like a key on Instagram, like teasing something for the 23rd. And I was like, Masai, key to the city. He's re-signed. Everything's good. Everything's kosher. There's nothing to worry about. And it was just like a collection of NFTs. Yeah.
I think Masai would come. I don't even bring it as a topic because it's so, it would be so silly if he walks at this point, because I think if you got to leave a situation, you leave and you sort of don't leave the franchise sort of hanging here. So anyway, let's not talk about Masai. He's a separate topic. So let's move on to the Kyle Lowry sign and trade situation. And the context here is that the Raptors did not feel that the offers that they got for Lowry at the deadline were attractive enough for him to trade him, so they kept him. And I think this was best summarized by a meme that I saw on somewhere where it had the Grim Reaper going door to door.
Yeah.
And like, the first door was like, I don't know, Philly and the Clippers. So all the teams that could have acquired Lowry and ended up like not winning the title because they had partially because they had shit point guard play. Believe it or not, I think I'm wrong on this one, or I was wrong on this one, they might get more value out of him at this point than they would have at the deadline. What do you think of that?
The first thing I think is I own a Reggie Jackson three-pointer NFT, and I can't have you tanking that value. So it wasn't shit point guard play from the Clippers. It was actually very good point guard play from the Clippers. But no, I'm not sure if it's necessarily more value. I think you're probably in a similar situation as you were at the deadline, maybe a little bit less leverage. Now, the destinations, I would guess the three would be Miami, Philly, could be the Lakers, and could be the Clippers. And it's not like any of those teams have a tremendous amount to give up. And they didn't really have a tremendous amount to give up prior to the trade deadline either. Now, Miami, I guess the sticking point was Tyler Hero. He might have, I think actually the Raptors might have less bargaining power, but I actually think Hero might have played his way down into the Raptors bracket again. I think Hero might have played so poorly that he's actually within the reason for the Raptors to ask for. But I don't really see a great haul here. And that's not to say that like the Raptors can't get a contributor, but it's like, you're not getting Simmons. If you trade him to the Lakers, like you might get like Kuzma and KCP, but you're not getting like picks. You're not getting anything like that, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think Kuzma, KCP is the level of player that you would sort of expect from a Lowry return at this point. A pick would be nice. But people aren't just giving up on picks. Unless mm-hmm. you trade to OKC, then they're gonna hand those out. That's all they got. I do feel that the number of teams that you can trade Lowry to at this point increases just because you can mix and match you can match salaries and do a lot of arithmetic to kind of get to find more teams who may need him. Whereas at the deadline, it was sort of limited to two or three buyers who had shown some interest in the point guard position. Whatever happens with Lowry, what do you think of the idea of retaining him and keeping his services? I'm firmly sort of against it because not firmly. I'm against it because it doesn't necessarily. He's not the type of guy that you can sort of play 15, 20 minutes a game so that he mentors everybody and gives Malachi Flynn the time he needs. If you're going to hang on to Kyle Lowry's playing 40 minutes a game, right? That's what he does. He doesn't know any other way to play the game. So he's not a guy you can bring on in a part-time role for mentorship purposes. He only knows one way to play. That's my main reason why I think Lowry probably isn't a great fit in Toronto as much as it pains me to say that. And that time is better invested, because the most valuable thing in the world is in the NBA is minutes. And you got to give your minutes to people who you hope will be part of your long-term future. And right now that looks like it's Malachi Flynn and Gary Trent Jr. and those guys. So that's my rationale for looking for a Lowry trade. What do you think of keeping him? Does that make any sense from any angle?
I think, I have to stipulate, if they take Suggs, then absolutely not. I mean, Suggs would mean that you have, what's that, Van Vliet, Suggs, Lowry, Flynn, and Trent, all guys who can only play the guard spots. And you said, Lowry's going to demand, or he's going to play 40 minutes a game. And that's not because he's, a selfish player. I'm sure he would accept a role like that. He's just too good. You can't, Nick Nurse and Kyle Lowry have an established relationship. And, the Raptors aren't the type of organization to just go full tank unless it's, the last 2 weeks of the season and everyone's, resting. Lowry isn't going to accept 38 minutes a game, or sorry, he's not going to accept 15 minutes a game, because his play is going to dictate that he's going to play 38 minutes a game. He's that type of player. So yeah, there's just not room for him. And you're right, Flynn, it's not just Flynn's minutes, it's Trent's minutes. It's if they pick up someone in the second round, because a lot of the second round targets are going to end up being guards. So you get typically in the second round, you'd be looking for a very specific skill. And oftentimes there are basically shooters who have zero other skills who fall to the second round. And those are the sometimes the highest value to players to pick up in the second round is this guy's from Utah. He's 6'4". He can only shoot. He does nothing else, but we'll take a flyer on him. Those types of players. So I can see the sort of mentorship role suiting him, from a character perspective, but he's too skilled at this point.
Yeah. And I think Blake broke down in his Athletic article, a lot of different sign and trade situations for Lowry. So there's, so regardless of whether we're able to move him, I think we can all agree that the interest in Lowry in general has increased since the trade deadline, because people have kind of seen that it's important to have good point guard play, good leadership on the court, and talent alone sort of isn't enough. And Philly, to me, is, you talk about irresponsible. It was irresponsible for them from a management standpoint not to trade for Lowry. What was it, Maxey they were hanging on to or whatever it was? I mean,
Thibault maybe?
Yeah, well, you make that trade as much as it hurts, because if you want to get value, you got to give up value. The Raptors know that best when they traded Valanciunas for Gasol, and that it was in all good trades, both teams benefit. Philly was looking for a deal where only they benefit. That's not going to get you anywhere. And I thought that was a very poor decision on their management's part. But you know what, man, F Philly, who cares about them?
I think also not only did it show from a general they lacked talent perspective of the point guard position, but just it perfectly encapsulated that last game. Embiid had 7-8 turnovers. No one could get the ball to him in the post. They didn't have anyone who could throw a little entry pass. He couldn't duck in quickly and get the ball. I can't, being a Raptors fan for my entire waking life, I can't tell you how many times I've seen Lowry pick the ball up and at half court throw a really long dart into a guy who just sprinted down the floor, and it is in good post position. They could have used nothing more than specifically Kyle Lowry. But I just don't see, if Morey calls tomorrow and calls Ujiri tomorrow and says, we'll give you Maxey straight up for Kyle Lowry, I'd prefer Kuzma and KCP to that. And if that's on the table, then that's probably the best offer they get.
Well, at this point, you're going to lose him for nothing. Mm-hmm. So any offer is better than no offer. So I would take whatever's on offer for Lowry.
But I think he's the type of guy he would almost rather, if it's going to be because there are only a certain number of teams that need a point guard and are winning teams. And he's the type of guy that I'm sure he'd rather stay in Toronto. And even if it means he's playing 10 minutes a game, then go to I don't know, Sacramento. That's a bad option because they have two guards. But a losing team that is just going to throw a whole bunch of money at him.
All right, man. Let's round this off with one more topic that we had identified. Bradley Beal is a guy who's like, it seems like he's been on the trade market for like 20 years. Is he ever not been on the market? Like even when the Wizards were good, he was on the market. So I don't know exactly what's going on with Beal. The Raptors always get linked with him for whatever reason, even though there's been no, like, I think Ujiri made a call to inquire about it like last year. And since then, like it's a trade people love talking about. To me, that trade is like, you got to give up too much so that when you get him here, there's nobody to play with. Unless the Wizards are willing to are looking to get younger and want to deal in picks and these sort of things. What's your take on the Beal situation?
Yeah, I just want to first off, it's just hilarious. Like, the Beal rumors started right when they're a winning team, and it's like, we got to move Beal to like build around Wall. We need to get Wall more help. Beal's this like young asset. Let's go get a star for him. And then just last year, it's like, we need to move Wall to build around Beal. Wall's got to get out of here. We need to get Beal some good co-stars. Yeah, I mean, like, and this goes back to an earlier conversation we had about the quality in the league. Like, okay, put Beal on the Raptors. Let's say it's Fred for and like a whole bunch of picks, a tremendous amount of picks, like enough to make you like sick to your stomach thinking about like 10 years from now, I'm going to be watching this Raptors team. I can't believe it. Like even then, is that a team that's like guaranteed to win the conference finals in the East? To me, like, I'd probably still take the Nets over a Beal OG Siakam core. And I think they play the Bucks pretty closely. I think they play whatever iteration of the Sixers we see, whether with or without Simmons, pretty closely. I think they play the Celtics pretty closely. And that's not even to mention Heat, Hornets are getting better. Like there's just a ton of talent in the East right now. It's not really the time to make a win now move. And that applies to Lillard as well. And I know, like, I'm sure every NBA fan base, except for, you know, the Trailblazers fans, are coming up with fake Damian Lillard trades to try to, you know, entice the GMs browsing like the back pages of Instagram and sees like your Lillard jersey swap.
Nice graphic, must be a nice trade.
But I mean, I just don't see, you're right. You're probably giving up two of Fred, OG and Pascal for either of those guys. And four, I imagine, because like Lillard and Beal, like this isn't going to be the Kawhi deal, which was a miracle, does not happen, not only for the Raptors, ever. I mean, that's going to go down, even though he left after a year, that's going to go down as like one of the most lopsided superstar trades. I mean, that's like the definition of like four quarters for a dollar. Like Jakob Poeltl's good. DeMar DeRozan had two serviceable, slightly below all-star years in San Antonio. And it was a late first round pick they acquired. Like that doesn't happen. It was a miracle.
So with Beal, man, one of the strikes against Beal is that he's been in the league for a very long time. He's been around for a while now. And it's not like he's always had crap teams around him. The Wizards have had some decent units with him and Wall that should have done better in the postseason. His history, like his record as a playoff performer, as a team playoff performer, his team's record in the playoffs, and the general, you know, quality of Wizards basketball, especially on the defensive end, has not been great throughout his career. So I don't see Beal as somebody who's going to come in and elevate the rest of the guys. Yeah, he might get good individual scoring. It's kind of like DeMar DeRozan's a perfect example. DeMar DeRozan had some very good individual scoring without necessarily great team results. So to me, you're getting maybe a slightly, not even slightly better, because DeMar had a pretty damn good season. So you're getting a similar type player than what you had in DeMar over to the Raptors. And we have tried that experiment before. It doesn't really work. We need people who play strong team basketball, elevate everybody's game. Yes, Kawhi Leonard is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing, so you're not going to get that. But I just don't see how Bradley Beal, which is very parallel to DeMar DeRozan, is gonna solve the Raptors' problems. I just don't see it, especially on the defensive side where the Raptors were brutal last year. And again, maybe part of it is Aaron Baines, But overall, getting a guy like Beal on here is not. You know what I think? I think Raptor fans are still sort of scarred from that 4-0 sweep way back when, and deep psychologically, they feel like they need that guy on their side because that's what happened to them.
Well, and he had an excellent series in defense of Beal. Like, he's a scoring champ. He's a good player. I agree with you that like you need like more than just scoring. Like, to be that sort of what we were talking about, like a tier one player, you need more than just scoring. Like, every single player that you would say, no doubt I can win a championship with this guy being my best guy, is either a scorer and a great like setup man, playmaker, a scorer and a great rebounder, a scorer and, you know, can play excellent defense, etc. So Beal might not be that guy. I think there is something to be said about avoiding the purgatory, which is like, you know, where whatever the Hornets and the Pistons prior to this year have spent the last decade in, which is like good enough to challenge for the eighth seed, bad enough to, you know, potentially be in the lottery and jump up a bunch of spots. That's just not a good place for your organization to be. So I want to see some drive, I guess. Like, whether that means getting way younger or going for a win now move, I might be on board for that. Maybe not Beal, but if the guy comes up, I'm not opposed to it in principle.
So that's not, purgatory. Purgatory is like, if you're always good enough for like the fifth or sixth seed, but never getting any better, which is what the Raptors were for the longest time under Chris Bosh. If you're struggling to get the seventh or eighth speed for consistently, you should blow that shit up because that's not going anywhere. I agree with you, man. I mean, Beal in theory might be okay. In practicality, he probably isn't going to happen. And just me personally does not necessarily excite me because I think the Raptors, if you had to give me the option of get Beal in and trade, like, I don't know, let's say Van Vliet or Siakam, I would still opt for our current, our status quo, because I think Pascal Siakam's defensive impact on the Raptors is usually very understated. I think he holds the Raptors defense together. If the Raptors had some decent big man play last year, I think our defense would be a lot better, because a lot of the times we just have to like scramble to cover the defensive holes in the middle. I would still go with the current roster. I think the current roster is fine. I think, yeah, we need to get a big man. I think if you do the Mobley thing, or if you just draft Suggs and just incrementally improve and get some backup for Kem Birch, I think the Raptors will go up. What did they finish last year? 12th? Were they somewhere around there? Silly, right? I mean, I can see them easily jumping up 5 or 6 or 7 spots even just by bringing the same team back next year with some minor modification. Unless there is an attractive proposition, which isn't as risky and is more clear to me, I don't see why the Raptors should do anything. And I don't think they will.
Yeah. And, you know, you never know who the next guy who wants out is going to be. Like, you never know. It could be anyone. So you're right. It's good to be in a position where you're good enough to add one guy and be a championship contender. And that's like, I mean, if there's ever a team that's proven that that's a viable way to construct a championship contender, it's the Raptors. That's exactly what they did. So
let's end off on this one last point. DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry joining forces again. Of all the stuff that I have seen over the summer so far, that probably is the most realistic thing I can think of, because the two are best buddies. They're open about it. I think they would love to play together. You know, both have the ability to kind of, you know, shape their future. I just don't see why they wouldn't be actively talking and trying to maneuver that and orchestrate something where they come together. I think if Lowry doesn't re-sign in Toronto and I think he's joining DeMar DeRozan in LA or some other destination. I think that's if I had a Bet365 account and they were offering that, I'd put a couple of $100 on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that was one of the, you know, every year, like the yearly tradition of the Lakers jersey swap free agency, like a wave of Laker jersey swaps. But that was one where I saw, I was like, yeah, I can see this. DeMar's an LA guy. Lowry's trying to win a ring. He's a good contributor, but doesn't want the pressure of, you know, being the second, third best guy on the team. Yeah. And honestly, like, I guess I'll pose you the question before we sign off. Is that your favorite? Like, add Lowry and DeMar to the Lakers, and, you know, say we get back Kuzma and KCP. Is that your favorite to win the championship?
So let me just first say that I don't really care about any other team but the Raptors. So every other team can just go to hell. I mean, don't care. Don't get happiness from them winning or you know, I get enjoyment from them losing. But, you know, so I don't care what happens to even DeMar. Don't care about him. Don't care about the Lakers. It's the most plausible. I'd add that I'd be happy with a Kuzma-level player. Mm. That's about the quality of player that I would expect to get back in the best case scenario for a Lowry trade. At this point, I would even settle for someone like Maxi from Philly, if that's possible. Tyler Hero, as you said, he's played him down, would settle for him too. At this point, you're looking for any sort of return on an asset that you're going to lose for nothing. So you can't really be too picky at this point.
Yeah. All right. This is a great conversation.
All right. So I think that concludes our Rapcast for this week. Kyle, thanks for joining us. Just a reminder I don't know why I'm reminding people, but we do have a draft party happening on draft night on July 29th, Thursday at Sportsnet Bar and Grill. We are sold out, so it should be a nice evening there next to the old Sky Dome. It's a great venue. So we'll do a podcast from on location. Especially if the Raptors go ahead and move up, as I think they will, hope they will, to get Mobley. Kyle, thanks for joining, man.
Thanks for having me.